The impromptu small gathering was a compact and bijou affair, mainly comprising of several semi-skimmed, milky, middle-class Christians, really, i.e. a couple of school teachers, a doctor, accountant, a librarian, a optician. There was, however, one exception, and that was the butcher. He sighted and smelt completely out of place amongst these vegans and veggies, lentil-eating lesbians of sorts. A most, shall we say, scenting of sulphur, rather like the red meat devil himself. The pseudo-sommelier, where he was hosting the soiree, an affable, laughable type of chap who could always be relied upon to supply an excellent selection of the old and filthy vino veritas. As always, it brought forth the attendance of many, many appreciative applicants. And they usually, and obviously, you know, you were wasting your time in trying to train these pagan palates. They'd not really had any sort of training at all in the tasting of tipple. Basically, they'd flush anything down their dry, dusty gullets, and those now seemed as long as neck scarves that stretched all the way to their cotton socks. As always happens when drink is administered to the Homo sapien, they quickly attempt, especially if it's free, they quickly attempt a liquid suicide. And conversation, well, that obviously turns from topics of current affairs and news, price of property and peas, to the, venturing towards, shall we say, the seven deadly sins, or the seven instincts of man and woman, as the frontal lobes are fried away by drink, disarmed, the rationale allows the savage beast to crawl from its soul cage, and you are left with just the reptilian brainstem to run amok. It was the butcher's dog that was the first to diversify and draw the dialogue down the deviant path, possibly due to too much red wine and too much red meat. His opening gambit was a little, well, quite a bit sexual, and it did sort of titillate and tempt the Christian, shall we say. He announced, well, gently announced, that after his divorce, he'd bought a sexual toy, as it were, a doll, life-size, real to every, in every way, shape and form. Extremely lifelike, such a point, texture, skin, you could plug it in, warm it up, leave it, cool it down. You could literally do quite a number of approaching the sadistic things, and dress up. It came with various garments and accessories for the single man. So no more lonely nights, as it were. Anyway, he began to explain that this Mark 10 pleasure model that cost an absolute fortune arrived from Amsterdam in a plain brown cardboard box, Jack in a box, I guess, or Jacqueline in a box, as it were, feminine. Unfortunately, in haste, he'd not really paid much attention to the instructions, and quickly sort of inflated the plastic partner with the canister supplied, similar to what he did normally at the weekends with his Hydrolite kayak. And, he set the scene, and after a beer-bashing Thursday night curry session with the boys, he thought he'd get a little risky and frisky with the finisher, breaking in his new plastic perversion, as it were. And it set the scene anyway before he went out, which was a good job, because he'd usually got smashed sideways from sobriety, and last thing he needed was to try and blow up his partner. Sort of the pre-coital situation had been set, and He'd ventured on the curry night, and back in the boudoir, he'd set the scene with a romantic red light porn movie, and in situ was his new damsel in distress. Well, not in distress. And the lava lamps were flowing, and he'd taken Viagra, and his plastic vixen, well, he was going to give her a proper sorting out. And that was the intention, which did actually take place. And he was laying back after a precoital appreciation society, smoking a cigarette, and thinking to himself, fantasy of her fetishism, thinking, well, this sapien silicon sexual toy that she, well, it had achieved much more than expected, and but he was drowsily and dreamily sort of thinking on the lines of what to do next, and suddenly fell drowsily into a little, shall we say, dreamy sleep, and well, he forgot all about his cigarette, which had punctured his plastic partner, which unfortunately had gone up like the Hindenburg disaster with an enormous explosion that had taken out part of his bedroom windows and the curtains, and rocked the entire top garret floor flat. Also, the entire ball of flames had singed every single hair off his body, including his head, and blown bits of plastic burning everywhere, which had started numerous small fires. The smell of his hair and the burning doll was quite incredible. The other thing is that it had also, the explosion had been so loud that he was totally deaf, with ringing in his ears, and he was trying to grasp the enormity of the situation and damage, when suddenly his small and compact bijou garret flat door was, well, broken down by a number of firemen, followed closely by police and ambulance service. In fact, it seemed that he got an entire orchestra of shall we say, people in his boudoir, which was terrifying, but he couldn't hear anything either. So everyone, all the entire emergency services, to him looked as though they were actually miming in some glass vacuum, asking him all sorts of questions which he couldn't answer, and they took him to be very injured indeed, and quickly carried him to a nearby stretcher, onto which he was placed, then strapped down and told not to move, not that he could hear what was being said, but he got the gist of what they were saying by their hand gesticulations. But it was all so alarming. Even his neighbours, one or two, were peering in the room. They were beating out the flames, but they seemed to be intensifying them. And the next thing, he was whisked down three flights of stairs to an ambulance. Whereupon, after that, the fire brigade rolled out their hose up the staircase and filled his entire garret flat with hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water. He was whisked off to the burns unit of the nearby Harrogate Hospital to be given a very probing and alarming sort of very in-depth detailed search of the burns and the aspects of whether he'd broken any bones, and it was all terrifically embarrassing, especially having the parts of a plastic doll removed from his very scorched, singed skin. And the alarming part was that a lot of his fantastic plastic doll, especially the exclusive vagina made in China, had now tightened around his scrotum, rather like a a sort of an elastic band of a castration. He now got the gist of what the atrophy of a bull calf felt like when it was being elastrophy, of having its testicles removed. This brought fits of laughter as he was explaining to his Christian congregation that they obviously had drank sufficient to appreciate this catastrophic situation which the butcher found himself in. However, having been given 2 to 3 hours of microsurgery, everything seemed fairly okay, apart from those very, very dark and black burns here, there and everywhere. He was moved on to the ward, and there, a couple to 3 hours later, he was given what was a very in-depth bedside chat by one of the police officers, who mentioned the explosion and scenes of devastation and unrest, and hinted even at the perhaps terrorism. But of course this was dispelled by the evidence that he'd produced, which was the remnants, basically the head that was left of his very, very expensive Pleasure Model Mark 10 doll. The lifting her charred head from the cardboard box, marked in bright red letters of evidence, it resembled the decapitated head from Braveheart. His goddess Goldilocks had, well, just didn't have any, and didn't bear any resemblance to what had been sent from Amsterdam. More a burnt skull of the king's brother that William Wallace had hacked off with a sword. The biggest problem was that what was rumbling heavily through his consciousness was that he was going to have to fill in an insurance claim, very, very in depth, as to why his garret flat had caught fire and why 3 other flats below him had now been drenched in water to the point where all the electrics and the ceilings and decor had been ruined, and by the overzealous fireman, as he termed. But, well, what was he going to say? And also, when he returned to his dwelling, what was he going to say to the neighbours, and how could he possibly look at them when they'd spent an entire evening dressed in their skimp clothing and dressing gown, stood on freezing to death on a winter's night in the very, very sensitive Synagogue Street. It was going to be alarmingly embarrassing on the way back, and this is what was rattling through his mind as the police officer was giving him a sanctimonious lecture and sermon on the uses of inflammable gas and canisters, as though he was a boy of 8 on his first camping trip using colour gas in cooking. So he was not looking forward to greeting and meeting his fellow flat dwellers, as it were, due to most of them now spending weeks in the Crown Hotel nearby, whilst they're having their very, very plush, luxurious Lusseau apartments revamped. And as one of the persons nearby had termed it, the Big Bang of Synagogue Street. Very, very alarming indeed. He shuddered and shook and wondered, should I leave town?